So why did you burn a Banksy?
That was, it was about 3 years ago at this point, right? It was, okay, so first of all, different time, right? So NFTs were just not what they are now. It was CryptoKitties and it was CryptoPunks, and like that was kind of it. There was like Zed Horse, I think, maybe at the time. But I loved my CryptoKitties and I had a few punks back in the day. And so my family and friends were all, didn't understand what the hell NFTs were, and was like, well, if there's no, you know, there's no value there, right? Like, if it's not on my wall, it's not my living room, it's not art. Like, that's just a JPEG, you know? And so I said, okay, well, how about this? Let me take something that I know has value, right? Quote unquote value, right? It is art, which was a Banksy art piece valued about like $90,000, sold from Sotheby's auction.
So you auctioned that for yourself?
No. So I bought that from an art gallery here in New York. I then lit that on fire, turned the, you know, had Vice News kind of professionally photograph that, turned that into an NFT, and we ended up selling it for about $400,000, which I believe for all of 2021 was the highest average price sale on OpenSea, and I think we're still in the Wikipedia for the word NFT to this day, which is really cool. Yeah. So it was about the start of the conversation.
You had a good return on that as well, yeah.
Definitely.
Nice. Amazing. And then, like, did you really set yourself on fire as well?
Yeah.
Like,
that was so I did that last week. I did that last week for celebrate the upcoming Zion launch. The company's called Burnt. I do think that I am a bit of a pyromaniac when it comes to that. So there's a part of it that's just, like, fun, which is, like, this is really cool. But then, you know, another part of that, which is, you know, it's a good way to capture attention kind of for us, right? I think acting as like a vessel and acting as like a beacon, or like a beacon for the future is really cool. And I think we like the symbolism of fire, of like the rebirth, and especially given the industry and our message that crypto is effectively a scam and that normal day users can't use crypto because it's impossible for them, you know. And so it was very exciting, and we're excited to kind of get a lot of the official footage out as well.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, every crypto project needs a meme, right? And you're definitely on top of the game there.
Hell yeah. You have to be.
Awesome. Yeah. So like, walk us a little bit, like, what is Zion? Like, what are you working on? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So Zion is, you know, a blockchain for regular people, let's call it. We understand that to onboard the next billion users, we need to go to them. And so our entire goal and our entire shtick is really creating a Web2 experience for all the products that deploy on us. And then in addition to just kind of not being completely siloed of an ecosystem and allowing products to kind of take the front line. And I think when you look at where we are and what we're building for, it's, you know, we see our main success in the products that kind of deploy on us, reaching a mainstream audience.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And then you're looking to basically onboard like mainstream applications building on top of Zion. That's the main goal. So like really kind of mainstream adoption.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Consumer applications.
Yeah. And do you have any applications or like developers that you're working with already?
Yeah. I mean, we have an ecosystem of over 150 projects. You know, we just had a hackathon, 60 people. You know, I think there were like 300 submissions. Three of them use the generalized abstraction library or the NPM library. We've been launching, you know, I think we launched a testnet about a month and a half ago. Had over 1 million users and over 12 million transactions. You know, I think we've had 6 projects deploy, and we've been doing a project every week. We continue to do so, and we have a lot in the pipeline, especially as it comes to, you know, incubations and projects that we're working with. You know, it's all very exciting.
That's great. Yeah. And like all of these projects, are they incubated by you, or like are these independent developers? And I mean, yeah, getting 1 million users, that's a lot. Like where they come.
It's definitely not a little. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I think that the easiest thing, right? Like I've been building this industry for 7 years, and for me, it is the first testnet that I've ever been able to have my parents use. You don't need a wallet, right? Like, and this is just a testament to what we're building, right? It is a Web2 experience. I welcome anyone to try to use it. It is a fully Web2 experience. You can do it on any device with enough RAM and internet connection. I say that because I did it on my Xbox. You know, we had people doing it on Vision Pro and stuff. You can't do it on a Nintendo Switch, unfortunately, because there's not enough RAM. However, most devices with enough RAM, you can use the testnet on. You don't need a private public key. You don't need to do the C phrases. You don't need to know any Zion token. Everything's going to be dollar denominated. It feels like a Web2 experience. And, you know, it is definitely the impetus of why I think we've seen such easy successes, because we've removed the friction. We've removed the barriers of entry, whereby if I was, say, another chain, I would require people to need to download a wallet. I would require them to need to go to a faucet, claim money for a faucet, you know, save their seed phrase, switch to the testnet network. But in this case, it's easy.
So using the Zion testnet means like using an application built on top of the Zion testnet, or
yeah,
like just being able to transact or like interact with the
Projects. Yeah, it's not like some random back and forth transactions. The way that we kind of account for this is, you know, every user, it's a combination of all the projects that have been deployed on the testnet, and then transaction, that number is derived from the number of kind of unique transactions from the projects, obviously, on the testnet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And the magic experience from Zion like stems on the generalized abstraction.
Correct.
What is that like? Can you break it down for us?
Yeah. I think, you know, generalized abstraction is definitely an umbrella term as it kind of relates to what we've done. And I definitely implore people to check out the white paper if you're interested. But I would say that it's split into three distinct kind of factors. One of them, which is our protocol level generalized abstraction, which kind of the only really enshrined UX opinions on the protocol level, where on the protocol level, yes, you can use an EOA, but predominantly we've made it so that you could also, on the protocol level, be using smart contract accounts, and accounts are more so instances of a contract that can then, on a protocol level, interact, which then divides void of all the fragmentation that kind of comes with the smart contract and the social consensus level, but then allows just for very quick iteration. And so there's a whole sphere that I could talk about for 30 minutes there. And then there's another aspect called our parameterized fee layer, which effectively is me saying, okay, I never really want a user to know what gas is. And how do we, you know, sitting down and saying, how do we get this? You know, like, how do we have this vision where people can just use this in the same way that they can use any Web2 application? So what our parameterized fee layer is, on like a very baseline basis, is saying anyone can use any token to operate on our chain. It'll eventually sell to Zion. But the thing that we wanted to avoid was that like really awkward interaction for a new user needing to go to Coinbase and needing to like top up their wallet. And then in addition, right, like as like a two birds, one stone, kind of being able to just use this, right? You don't need to go to a SEX, you don't need to go to a DEX and buy and swap and bridge. We wanted to remove all of that friction. You know, and so whether it's partnerships with checkout.com and Stripe to be able to facilitate credit card and debit card directly for digital assets on chain, or, you know, a partnership with USDC for USD denomination, you know, I would say that the parameterized fee layer on a protocol level basis effectively is just like, and on a technical basis is just you can use any token. But where that really works in kind of the opinion and the enshrined UX opinion then leads us to saying, okay, well, now we can use USD for the entire chain, right? And we can make it look like people are just using eBay or Etsy or Facebook or something like that, you know, and be able to do this on a hyper-scalable level. Then I would say this kind of like third part, right, in generalized abstraction is where we call abstracted interoperability. In this kind of capacity, it's very similar to the term that you probably heard a lot of, like chain abstraction. You know, and effectively where we aim for that is just saying, you know, we don't think that users should care about the chain, and we use interchain accounts to be able to facilitate, you know, cross-chain accounts. So like the winner of this last hackathon, their name was Nomos, they won because they built an application that allowed you to use Talus, the marketplace on Injective, through Zion, and you can't even tell.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the ultimate user experience, that you don't know, like, which chain are you on.
Exactly.
And in terms of the fees, like, does it mean, like, someone doesn't need to pay fees, or like they get the fees subsidized when they're using it? Or?
So there's two types of transactions that we kind of account for on the chain, I would say. The first is boring. The first is like, if there's no monetary value to it, it just kind of, you're familiar with FeeGrant in the Cosmos ecosystem? Or
really,
so the application sponsors the payment, right?
And, oh, right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's one of them. And that's normally when there's free things, like a free mint or like a PO app or something that people don't, there's not value attached to it. I think it also gets more interesting when there is value attached to it, and it is, you know, we kind of are able to take a percentage based off of the, we're able to take a percentage based off of the total transaction value, similar to an eBay or like an Etsy would with like a service fee, which like, you know, $100, 99.9 goes to the final account. But that's how we get around the really annoying gas issue. But of course, in kind of this capacity, they're, you know, pennies on the dollar for gas fees.
Awesome. Yeah, I mean, I think that's really smart on like just taking a fee from the actual transaction value. Seems very fair. But then if it gets subsidized, then is there like a potential issue around spam or something?
As it's potentially subsidized? Well, I mean, yeah, and I think spam is definitely like one of those things that when you have like when you have free things, you always open up the vulnerability for spam, right? And I think depending on what you do, it is on the onus of the product itself, right, to, you know, not spam the entire network, right? Because it's on obviously kind of them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. How do you see Xion in the whole like crypto space and also interacting with like crypto users? Because it seems like you're kind of really targeting people that are entirely new to crypto or like don't even want to have anything to do with it, maybe.
Well, I mean, I think users are users, yeah. Right? Like I think the way we see ourselves is bringing users no matter, you know, what the creator background is, you know, and I think we allow a total addressable market to exist. There's always going to be the market, right, for people who know crypto and they want to learn that and they want to be a power user. There will always be a market for the power user. I think we're opening up the floodgates for people who don't want to be a power user, want to be a casual user, you know, and I think for us, success for us is success for everyone, especially as we can connect to many chains and we are composable with every chain. You know, we see success in the amount of products that get usage, no matter which chain they're on.
So how do you see the path towards like mainstream adoption of crypto and like what role will Xion play in that?
I think that Xion should be taking a backseat in a lot of things, right? I think the way that we reach consumer adoption is through the products that can be built on us. And I think, you know, when I always say I see success in the success of the products that build on us, this is exactly what I mean, right? Which is, you know, the way that we're not going to be the ones disrupting the Netflixes of the world or disrupting the Ubers of the world, whatever it is, right? Like, we're providing the foundation for the next internet, you know, and a stronger internet. And, you know, it wasn't, you know, and I think it's on the way that we reach the next sect of users is by building products that people actually want. And I think one of the main issues that I've seen in crypto in the many years that I've been in this industry is a lot of these things have been a solution looking for a problem only marketed to people who know something about crypto. And so I think we've expanded the total addressable market substantially and now allow for genuine solutions to be created for genuine problems that exist in the world and be able to target their market.
Yeah. I mean, there are not many like actual crypto use cases, right? Besides obviously like payments and stable coins. But besides that, I guess there was like some attempts on gaming and so on. Where do you see Xion, like which type of use cases do you think will be utilized from applications building on top of Xion to like really drive adoption?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I think that we mostly focus in the way that we kind of, I would say that we didn't originally start as this, but over the past 2 years of kind of building this, we've just kind of seen it. I would say that we tend to see more consumer applications thrive because, like, here's the thing. We've built the easiest user experience in all of crypto, right? There's no doubt about that. But that's not really necessary if you want to go, you know, yield farm or go restaking on Pufferfy, right? Like, that's not inherently necessary. People don't even, like, there's a pyramid of people who know what Ethereum is and then know what, like, a liquid staking token is and then know what restaking is. And it's, to be at this point of restaking, you already know a lot about crypto, right? You already have a MetaMask. You already have, presumably, a lot of Ethereum. And so it's not really relevant for us, right? And so where we do see the benefit is these consumer applications, like not necessarily DeFi, but trying to take the concepts of ownership and community and bring them to kind of more of a digital realm.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then when we think about like Xion taking a back seat in like the adoption cycle, basically, and like letting the applications thrive, how do you see the value accrue? Thinking about like, obviously, there was a time when everyone talked about the Fed protocol thesis. I guess now people talk more about the Fed app thesis. and how do you see the value accrue for Xion? And then also we can dive a little bit into like the staking, I guess.
Yeah.
Because obviously the validators are the ones like running the blockchain. I guess it's a staking and governance token. But yeah, let's go one by one. Like, how do you see the value accrue for Xion with like kind of enabling mainstream adoption for a lot of apps? Yeah.
Well, I think allowing any token to be used is going to be important. Like, think about it like AWS credits, right? You know, it doesn't. I would say like that's the way that I imagine Zion acting is AWS, right? Or it's like a MongoDB, which is okay. And that's what I mean by backseat. Everything's run by it, but it doesn't matter at the end of the day, right? And so there's definitely value in MongoDB. There's definitely value being generated in AWS, but just because it's not this direct, oh, I need to do this to do this, it actually creates more friction to require people to do that. And so by allowing a higher volume of usage that then eventually settles to a Zion token, I think that's far superior than requiring someone to buy the Zion token and then introducing an inherent layer of friction to be able to use, you know, anything built on us. So we're definitely going for the economics of scale game over here as it kind of relates to what we do and the friction that we remove. And then, you know, as it, of course, relates to staking, right? Like, as I said, there's always going to be power users, right? There's always going to be validators. And listen, if you're running a staking node, I kind of assume you know a little bit about crypto. It would be really weird if you didn't, you know? And so especially as it relates, like, maybe we'll make it easier as time goes on. But, you know, we also see Zion as like an iceberg as well. Like, there's a reason we, you know, we're on the Staking Insider recording podcast right now, right? And it's because we obviously know our audience, right? And we know where the developers are and we know where we are on the iceberg funnel. And so the way, you know, there's always going to be power users. Our main business and our main clients are always going to be the developers. But, you know, of course, we believe that it's our job to also generate initial usage and bootstrap the network when it comes to users and ease of access and speed to deployment, you know, as it kind of relates to that.
Yeah, awesome. And then I think you also one of the only blockchains out there that are offsetting the inflation with the actual fees.
Weird to me. I mean, that's weird to me that we're the only ones. It really is.
I think Nia are doing it as well.
Nia probably does it well. Yeah.
Yeah. But apart from that, like, yeah, I wonder why not everyone is doing it, actually.
Dude, your guess is probably as good as mine. I think another thing that's interesting is, like, we do staking as for... We do staking on amount staked, not total amount, which I always found to be really, really terrible. As like you had like a very normal APY, but an insane inflation rate.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't make sense. So basically you allow to have high APYs with a low inflation rate because you base
manageable,
the
right?
inflation based on the number of tokens staked.
Exactly. Not just like an arbitrary, because then you have like this layer of fat that's, you just look at this and like, what was that decision for? But I mean, to be fair, like, so, I think it makes sense if you want to assume that all the tokens are being staked, because then you get to the same number, right?
Yeah. How do you see the economies playing out? Because it seems like you're basically building like kind of consumer layer for people that don't even know about Zion, like they don't have anything to do. So probably they won't be holding any Zion tokens and staking it as well. And then there's kind of the infrastructure layer, validators, crypto users that are kind of, yeah, running the validators and then maintaining the blockchain, basically. So there will be like two kind of interfaces.
Well, three. I think there's three as well, right? Because then you have like, I would say the project developers, which kind of sit in between, which, you know, and I think we have some interesting mechanics, which you can stake Zion token to effectively, you know, cover the gas sponsoring that you're going to be doing, right? And, you know, there's going to be a certain number, you know, a certain layer of technical knowledge. Like, you don't need to know everything down to kind of pure consensus and mempool level, right? But I do believe that, like, we want to find people who are very connected in the entertainment industry and want to then build a crypto product, not necessarily a crypto person who is just interested in entertainment. Because there's, you know, there's these are real companies, right? And you always want kind of in industry knowledge and you always want industry experience as it comes to building an industry-related project. Otherwise, what you tend to find, again, is like either insular building or a solution looking for a problem.
What are the most exciting projects building on top of Zion right now?
There's a ton. I mean, like, we have data marketplaces, which is really interesting, and we might be getting some really, really cool names on that, which hopefully comes out in the next 2 weeks. We have, I mean, I like this company called BetFi. It's just it's a cute casino, but you don't know that you're interacting with crypto, right? You also have, you know, a lot of loyalty programs. You have I'm a big music fan. I think I'm wearing a Rage Against the Machine shirt right now. But I'm a big music fan, and I think I see a lot of like really interesting interpretations of how people think streaming should work and how people think should IP rights for music ownership should work. And, you know, I think there's, you know, if we knew what our, you know, NBA Top Shots would be, then we would have just built one product and called it a day. But I think we're here trying to build an ecosystem and making educated bets and, you know, obviously helping people along the way. And, you know, the thing is that everyone else's success is our success, which makes a really, really amazing way to operate where you don't have like this one-sided winner.
Yeah, no, that's great. And yeah, definitely need to check out some of these projects. And on the like on the staking side, so basically the people that are investing into Xion, like buying Xion tokens and then running validators, maintaining the network, are these the only ones like basically interacting with the Xion token then? Because you say, okay, developers and consumers, they basically have little to do with the infrastructure.
Let's remember that everything still, every transaction and every monetary thing still does settle to Xion as a network token, right? So it may not be, hey, I'm using $5 worth of Xion right now, but it is saying, you know, or sorry, like here's $5 in Xion, it's $5 technically worth of Xion, right? And that's what's powering everything.
Right. Yeah, just abstracted in that sense. And how do you see the role of validators going forward in Xion? Obviously, like, yeah, maintaining kind of all the transactions. Do you see any other potential roles or use cases for validators going forward?
I mean, you're running the network. What do you mean? I would say validators play a crucial role in the operation of the network.
Yeah, no, for sure. I was just thinking about like, obviously, like, for example, in DYDX, there are also like validators are maintaining a decentralized order book. So I wonder if you had any ideas, like what other like potential roles could validators take on in that space? Obviously, that's kind of like very far.
Here's the thing, like, I guess like for us, like one of the early things is that we wanted to make a very low cost for validators, you know, and this was like one of the main reasons why we didn't run our own bridge, because once you do that, you skyrocket the cost of running, you know, running validator nodes, right? And I think for us, accessibility is something that's extremely important to us. And we didn't really want to create an environment where it was inaccessible to be a validator, where you needed to run like bare metal or you needed to have some really crazy setup. You know, I think for us, we value having low overhead for validators and be able to kind of facilitate a lot and have them participate in other ways rather than making a really terrible validator experience. So I would say like for us, if we needed to, maybe we would, but I think we as a team kind of lean more towards saying, I think we should make this easier for people, not harder.
Awesome. And how do you see, like, in terms of the number of validators operating on Xion? What are your plans there in terms of the maximum and then expanding?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't really see a maximum in sight. I think, like, we've been in testnet, obviously, and so we had some testnet validators. We're obviously going to be expanding that, and, like, if anyone's been paying attention to the Explorer, we've been actively expanding that. And then I think once we go live mainnet, we are, you know, we're ready to hit the ground running and start seeing what we can get.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah, that's exciting. So, like, what's a way to get started with Xion? Like, are there any, like, can you start using it? Can I start?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we've had a million users.
Oh, how does it work? Like, how do I get started?
I think, like, the easiest way, definitely go to xion.burnt.com, and there's a little testnet link on there. That'll lead you to one company called Bonus Block, who deployed on us. And from there, they definitely operate as, like a hub, I would say, of all the projects deploying and all the exciting things that we're working on.
Amazing. Yeah, definitely want to check that out. And if anyone wants to get involved otherwise in Xion, like, what's the best way to get involved in the ecosystem, either as like with the staking or like as a developer or like just using the chain? And
definitely, I mean, I would say, you know, for basic news, you want to follow up, totally Twitter is the best place for announcements. You know, I think we were just almost about to hit 450,000 followers there. But Discord, I'm in Discord a lot, and we have a team that is extremely active there, from the developer community to the international community, you know, whether it's ambassadors or validators or, you know, hackathon participants. You know, I think there's always someone online willing and ready to help, which is really exciting. But otherwise, you know, I would say, you know, I think we have a Telegram announcements channel, but I would say for everyone, like, as a best first stop, spot, try the testnet, right? See how easy it is. You know, I could sit up here for 27 minutes and 32 seconds like I've been and talk about how great the user experience is, but it's one of those things that you can only really believe when you see. And so I welcome everyone, see how easy the testnet is, you know, and just see for yourself of what we're aiming for, the vision, you know, and what we've been working on for the past 2 years.
That's amazing. And yeah, I think that's one of the like super exciting things about the generalized abstraction, that like it makes it super easy for anyone to get in. You don't need any crypto knowledge or something. And you can just experience that. And I guess that's really something that's so much needed, like to really drive real use cases for crypto. So I'm super excited for Xion and yeah, super keen for like, how does the timeline look like for you in 2024? Can you share anything there already or?
I could definitely say soon. We're looking for if not next month, somewhere around there for mainnet. So don't want to, I hate giving dates in this industry because nothing ever works out like they're planned, but
yeah,
I'll give you like a soon and then a TM.
Awesome. Cool. But yeah, exciting. Looking forward to it. Definitely going to follow that. And then thanks a lot for being on, Bernd. I really appreciate it. We're going to follow that closely.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you for your time.